Good morning, good morning, good morning. We are so fortunate to be here today on this day when we get to enjoy the sunrise and we get to enjoy the thunder and we get to enjoy the rain and the clouds. We got it all this morning, and so I really appreciated that, especially after many days of heat. So, pleasure to be here with you all today. Good morning. Welcome to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, also known as WUF. My name is Brad Hewitt. My pronouns are he and him, and it's a very great pleasure to be with you here this morning. We gather together as a community. Let us take a moment to look around at those of us sharing this sacred space. May we recognize our common humanity, imperfection, and spirit. Know you are surrounded by love where you are welcome. If you're here in person for the first time, we invite you to fill out a welcome form in a packet on the back seat of the pockets in front of you. Or scan one of the QR codes you can find somewhere in the room, and we'd love to get to know you better through that. Our services are streamed online and also recorded for the future and are available on our YouTube channel. You're welcome to watch the service live downstairs today as well, where there's more space to move around. For our online viewers, we offer a follow-up online coffee hour for socializing and sharing about the service. There is a link in your order of service, which was emailed this morning. And if you're new to us, you can certainly reach out to our administrator at woof.net, and she'll add you. For those of us here in person, please join us for our coffee hour downstairs after the service. And I think we also have a potluck today, so you're in luck. We'd love to talk more about what's been going on and get to know each other better. We acknowledge that the land where we reside is the traditional village sites of the Multnomah, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Tualatin, Kalapuya, Malala, Bands of the Chinook, and many other First Nations who made their homes along the Columbia River. We also acknowledge the systemic policies of genocide, relocation, and assimilation that still impact Indigenous Native American families today. We are a guest on these lands, and we respect and support the work of Indigenous and Native Nations leaders and families. May we make ongoing efforts to center Indigenous knowledge, creativity, health, and resilience in our work and life. Our speaker this morning is Tom Needham. Tom is an Oregon native and a longtime member of WUF. For the past several years, he has facilitated a humanist discussion group as part of the adult RE, or religious education program, here at WUF. In his talk today, he will share some of the insights that he has discovered in his humanist journey here at WUF. Now, please take a moment, stand up and greet those around you. Say hi to someone new. Please continue these conversations afterwards. Feel free to meet downstairs, outside. Here in the sanctuary, we'd like to keep you continuing to stay connected during the day. As Paisley lights our chalice, I'd like to read The Light Within Us by Brian C. Lee. We light our chalice as a symbol of the light within us and the light that flows through the world around us. It is a beacon as we search for truth. It is the warmth in our hearts for love, and it is the energy. It is the energy that propels us to action. May we be kindled by our time together. Please join me in our opening affirmation. The words will be on the screen.
Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful and what is wondrous. Let us open our minds to learn what is true and what is serious. Let us open our hearts to love ourselves and our neighbors.
And now, if you'll please join me in Spirit of Life, and as you may notice, we are all a cappella today, and I think we're going to have fun with it. We have some other music planned. So for those of us who are here, we're just going to launch into it. Super simple song, and Virginia's going to lead us in singing. So thank you.
Spirit of life, come unto me.
These are the words of Roger Ebert. Kindness covers all my beliefs. No need to spell them out. I believe that if, at the end, according to our abilities, we have done something to make others a little happier and something to make ourselves a little happier, that's about the best that we can do. To make others less happy is a crime. To make ourselves unhappy is where all crime starts. We must try to contribute joy to the world. That is true no matter what our problems, our health, our circumstances. We must try. I didn't always know this, and I'm happy I lived long enough to find out.
And now we have some special music by Copper Women.
I've decided to be happy. I've decided to be glad. I've decided to be grateful for all I ever had. I've decided to let go of all this pain tonight. I've decided to let go of all these demons inside. I know I am blessed. I know all I ever wanted was this.
Pause to reflect on the blessings and gifts we have received from this abundant earth and the generous spirit of this community. Our WOOF community thrives because of the generous spirit of those here today and those who came before. Today is a Donate the Basket Day, when we donate our offering collection to a selected organization. Our recipient this month is Gifts Rwanda. I'm sorry, Jim, you'll need to bring this back up. And have Annie Mills to tell us more.
Thank you so much for allowing me to come here today. This service so far has been very powerful because in the opening statement you made, it really aligns with what our mission is at Gifts Rwanda. And this song that we just listened to was exactly how the people of Rwanda are. And we here in America can learn so much from them and their spirit and their gratitude and their love. And it means a lot to see your guys' service embody that so beautifully. Gifts Rwanda is a unique nonprofit organization with a clear mission. We follow the lead of the locals in a small Rwandan village of Ruvarika. Our goal is to respond only when invited, and to help the people of Ruvarika create sustainable, positive change that encourage and support abundant, joy-filled lives. Our acronym, GIFTS, embodies our core values of giving, invited, fulfilling, transformative, and sustainable. A key priority for us is ensuring that the villagers we serve become self-reliant. Our focus is on empowering them with the skills and the education to progress independently. We support initiatives based on the community's requests of us, including helping them learn trade skills, home construction, food production, and education of all levels, primary, secondary, as well as university. I hope you can stay after this service for coffee, where I'll have more information that you can take home, along with items proudly crafted by the women we support, including this beautiful skirt that our sewing group made for me when I was there last summer. These showcase their creativity and skills in sustainable projects, which empowers them to earn a living. You can explore the diverse projects that we are involved in by visiting our website, giftsrwanda.org, as well. I am grateful for your support as we continue to empower individuals and uplift these communities. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Annie. As the music plays in a few minutes, today we're listening to Fila Me by Christos Papadopoulos. Please consider what you have to offer to our WOOF community, whether it be financial support, your time, talent, ideas, or your smile. Know that we all benefit, and we are grateful for your generosity. Thank you for your gifts of support today. Now, if you please join me in our affirmation of gratitude and giving. Let us be grateful
when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. Let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn.
Now, if we have any kids you'd like to come forward, Evan's going to read our Time for All Ages, which is a great story called My Voice is a Trumpet.
Good morning. My name is Evin Aksai. Hi, kids. Good morning. Hey, good to see you. Yes, parents too. This story is called My Voice is a Trumpet. Now, some have a voice as tall as a tree, loud and proud, and sways in the breeze. Some have a voice as small as a bee, soft and sweet, like
kisses of honey.
Some have a voice that's patient and wise, with
lessons of life
told through sparkling eyes. Some have a voice sunny and bright, a voice that can echo and light up the night. There's a voice that is silent, but still can be heard, with hands that move to speak every word. Then there's the voice that roars like a lion, a big voice that tells you,
so always keep trying.
We all have voices, voices to hear. My voice is a trumpet, strong and clear. My voice will be loud when I'm not sure I know, to wonder, to learn, and to ask as I go. I will learn to speak up, to show I am strong.
To stand for what's right.
And to know what feels wrong. My voice is a rainbow after the storm, loving, comforting, safe, and warm. I'll use my voice to find joy in others, reminding us all where
sisters
and
brothers.
I'll say no to hate by using this voice, and always choose love, a magical choice. Okay. How will you use your voice?
Oh, I had it wrong.
Oh. This is my fault.
Voices are powerful, and together where they're strong, like the musical notes of a
is
a beautiful song. How will you use your voice?
How will you use your voice?
Thank you. Now, if we can please create our arches.
to sing our children off to their classes. We hold you in as you go, as you go. May your heart be at peace as you go.
And this by Elizabeth Lerner McClay, which is appropriate for today. As drops of rain that find each other and build to become a track, a rivulet, a stream, a river, a sea. So we are drawn together. So we are fortunate to find each other. So are we bound together. On this shared passage toward an unknown ocean and eternity. Here at the front I have stones to symbolize and hold your joy, sorrow, or any other emotion today. If you choose, you may now come forward and place your stone in the water of community where it is seen and held. I'll have a microphone if you're moved to share and a few brief words to those gathered here and then online.
This is gratitude for the unflashy people in the world who don't get enough credit for their valuable contributions.
And I'm going to place two stones. Usually we do one, but it feels more appropriate today to place two stones. One for joys experienced and not shared and yet to be received, and one for sorrows experienced and not yet to be received. We'll now pause for meditation, prayer, or reflection as you wish. His reading, a reading with us today, and his talk. Tom.
This is the creed of Robert Ingersoll, who's probably the most famous humanist of the 19th century. Happiness is the only good. The time to be happy is now. The place to be happy is here. The way to be happy is to make others so. These are the words of 14th century Persian poet Hafez. Ever since happiness heard your name, it has been running through the streets trying to find you.
I gotta love a speaker who brings a timer. That's awesome, Tom.
This is going to be. Oh my goodness, this is big. There we go. That's yeah. I just couldn't. I couldn't see over it. Pretend it's an ice cream cone.
Yeah, just be sure you speak into it so people online can hear you.
Okay, like that. There we go. Okay, great. We'll do it. This is going to be an old-fashioned service like the ones we had when I first joined here in the 90s. It's going to be presented not by a minister, but by a member of the congregation. And at least part of it's going to be a This I Believe, which was a very popular topic in those times. In fact, this is going to be probably half This I Believe and half shameless infomercial for the humanist group. And then I'm going to attempt to provide time for questions and discussion, which every service back then had. One of the major reasons being a Unitarian feels like the right place for me is our seven principles, especially our fourth principle, the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. My favorite hymn is We Laugh, We Cry, at least partly because the last line of that hymn is to question truly as an answer. So in our search for truth and meaning, if you want good answers, ask good questions. Quite a few years ago, I discovered the ideas of Erwin Nyalem, who was a professor of psychiatry at Stanford and a clinical psychiatrist. After decades of clinical practice, he discovered that when people come to him with life-challenging problems and spend a long time grappling with those problems and trying to drill down deep into figuring out what's going on, they discovered, and he discovered, the origin of these problems were a set of four human dilemmas that all of us, all humans on the face of the earth, share. These are existential dilemmas, the dilemmas of being alive. These are very good questions. They're the most important and fundamental questions we can ask. The dilemmas are four, and they are death. We're all going to die. Freedom. We have the ability to choose and make decisions. That also means we can make bad decisions. Meaning. Life does not provide meaning. We have to figure out what our life's meaning is for ourselves. And finally, isolation. And here, Yalom is not referring to a social isolation. He's referring to an internal, fundamental, existential isolation. Every human being alive must come to terms with these dilemmas. It can be through active reasoning, or passive acceptance, or simply denial. I contend that one of the reasons people seek out religion and go to church is to find answers for these dilemmas. In fact, it's one of the few places in our culture where you can. It might even be a conscious effort, but that's what they're doing. Some churches will be very happy to provide their answers to your dilemmas, and perhaps providing the same answers to everyone who walks through their doors. But with us Unitarians, we want to find our answers to our dilemmas. The questions might be the same. In fact, I contend that we all share these same questions, but the answers that we come up with will almost certainly be different. So here are the major milestones of my searching for truth and meaning. I was raised an Episcopalian and never really questioned my theology until my 30s. I discovered I had questions that religion couldn't provide good answers to. One of the important milestones for me was the paradox about the existence of evil. The best expression of this was formulated by the Greek philosopher Epicurus some 2,500 years ago. It goes as follows. Is God willing to prevent evil, but is not able? Then he is not omnipotent. If he is able, but not willing, then he is malevolent. Is he both able and willing? Then where does evil come from? Is he neither able nor willing? Then why call him God? This leads to a related question. There is a philosophical concept called agency. Agency is where an actor causes something to happen. There are many types of agency, but there are two types of agency that are important for our discussion here. There is human agency, where an actor causes something to happen. That's human agency. But there is this inherent in religion is a second type of agency. It's the concept of supernatural agency. It's the belief that there is a supernatural power which can suspend the laws of chemistry and physics or intervene in our daily life in other ways. Some people feel very strongly about this. For example, some people feel that supernatural agency can change the path of a bullet. There is another name for supernatural agency. Miracle. So it seems to me that the really important belief question is not, do you believe in God? It's, do you believe in miracles? Because God may exist and may have created the universe, but if he doesn't influence it or influence your life in it, then that's the functional equivalent of not existing, at least in the here and now. I have another belief which is somewhat related. I believe the world is random, but I believe that it is more random than we think it is. I believe it's more random than we can imagine it being. It's even more random than we can handle it being. Because we seek certainty, and that's so important to us, that's another factor that sends people to religion and churches. The search for certainty. Have you heard the phrase, God has a plan? Of course, I had a Jewish friend that says, man plans, God laughs. But bad random events can happen, but good random events can happen too. Meaning that it's possible to mistake a random event for a miracle. In fact, I think it's surprisingly common. So, given that I don't believe in miracles, I'm left with a challenge. And lo and behold, I find a tool which I can use to meet that challenge. Humanism. Humanism is a philosophy that contends that humans, relying on science and reason, can build effective and moral lives without the expectation of guidance, of divine guidance or intervention. Our Unitarian seven principles draw significantly on humanist foundations. Typically, humanists are non-theistic. To understand the world, they rely on science and reason rather than on revelation from a supernatural source. Humanists tend to be advocates for human rights, for free speech, for progressive policies, and democracy. They maintain that religious belief is not a precondition of morality. They base their moral and ethical decision-making on reason, empathy, human nature, and compassion for human and other sentient beings. They object to excessive religious entanglement with education and government. And humanists have no belief in an afterlife, so they focus on seeking happiness in the here and now. Over the past several years here at WOOF, I facilitated frequent humanist meetings which explore humanist thought can provide guidance to building a good life, which is really my objective here. There is one question, however, that gets asked of all humanists and also atheists and agnostics. And that question is, how is it possible to be good without religion? Won't people just do what they want? In the humanist group, we've spent many sessions exploring different ethical approaches and dilemmas. Here's one view. Albert Einstein said, a person's ethical behavior should be based on sympathy, education, and social ties and needs. No religious basis is necessary. People would indeed be in a poor way if they had to be restrained by fear of punishment and hopes of reward after death. Sociologist Phil Zuckerman points out that someone who behaves morally because of a fear of punishment is not being moral, but is merely being obedient. A genuine moral choice is to behave in a way that would create a world you would like to live in if everybody behaved that way. That's an awkward sentence, but that summarizes my philosophy. Secular morality is a rich and fascinating field, which will be the topic of many future discussions in the humanist group. So, what about the humanist group at WOOF? The humanist discussion group focuses on the rich history of humanist thought, which extends all the way back to the Greek philosophers. The overlap between humanist thought and Unitarian thought, which is extensive. But its primary focus is how to build a good life in the philosophical sense without the expectation of divine guidance or intervention. We are not at all shy about borrowing ideas from past wisdom. Some of the smartest people who have ever lived have been tackling the same issues we are. Why not benefit from their efforts? Here's an example. Marcus Aurelius was considered perhaps the last good Roman emperor. He's also a talented general and also a thoughtful philosopher who was considered one of the founders of Stoicism. Here's one of the one of his meditations. Adversity is part of nature. The universe is indifferent to your existence. It will throw things at you that will be major challenges. Accept this for what it is. Difficulties, tragedies, and setbacks are part of life. They are even a part of what it means to be alive. Everyone will experience them. Since these events are in fate's hands, you should not hope and pray for them not to occur, but rather hope and pray that you have the strength of character to endure them when they do. We emphasize topics which are universal, meaning that they apply to all humans, young, old, black, white, men, women, straight, gay, and practical. My expression of practicality is, if you discover you're a humanist today, how will that change your life tomorrow? We also look at spirituality. That question has come up. We're not just kind of... we're not totally retained by our rationality here. And it turns out there's a kind of spirituality that does not require belief in divine presence. Depends on a set of 8 positive emotions that we have evolved to feel. And when taken in a group, this can be kind of a rational spirituality, which is really quite powerful. Some of these emotions are like awe and joy and forgiveness. We've spent a session on that. We meet for an hour. After a topic is chosen, I find a catalyst for conversation, that is an introduction, a TED talk, a YouTube video, a podcast excerpt, article, short story. That usually takes 20 minutes. The remainder of our time together is a discussion, and that's the goal, to have a really good discussion. The best sessions have a dilemma, a difficult choice, something which provokes thoughts and discussion. I try to avoid having a seminar which just presents a settled issue or concept. We look at issues through a variety of perspectives, philosophy, psychology, theology, also economics, sociology, even anthropology. I don't consider it to be my group. I view it as belonging to those who attend. I actively solicit ideas about topics people are interested in. We don't discuss belief much because that's a very personal and subjective decision. You could very well believe in a God that doesn't communicate or interact with our reality, and that's fine. So, the watchword of humanism, as was mentioned in Ingersoll's creed, is happiness for all humanity in this existence. Join us. Questions and discussion?
Yeah. So we have about 10 minutes, and I'm doing my Phil Donahue thing. So if you want to have a comment or question, please raise your hand, and I'll come around.
So you mentioned seven principles, but there's a lot of talk about the eighth principle, and there have been several that have been proposed. Do humanists address any of those issues?
The eighth principle has a different feeling from the other seven, and I find myself ambivalent about it. We haven't actually had a session discussing the eighth principle. That's probably a good would be a good topic to have.
What is it? You mention humans a lot, but you know we're just one species. Is there any advice about relation to the environment and other plants and animals?
I think that's a very perceptive question because there are some Christian folks who feel that there's a commandment for human beings to have dominion over the world. And that's not something that has ever had much resonance for me. We're a member of our species is a member of the web of life according to our principles. And the kind of humanism I'm interested in would be one that is only very aware that we're simply a species, unfortunately, the dominant species on this planet, and we need to try to figure out how to not screw it up any more than we have.
Tom, I have been a UU for a very, very long time, and I joined as a humanist, and I think that probably a lot of people here in this room are humanists, but they come to WWF and they don't say it. But we did a survey years ago, and it was very interesting to see how it came out because many of us are humanists.
Great. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Hi.
How would you square the humanism spirituality connection with like Zen or other Buddhist practices?
I'm really glad you asked that question. Humanism, it's for some reason at WWF we've decided the optimum time for adult education is at 9 a.m. on Sunday morning, and if you want adult education, that's when you're going to get it. And we've had this very successful Buddhist group that's been going on for many years. They meet at the same time as the humanist group, so I kind of view them as kind of the competition. And we've had some folks lament the fact that they couldn't go to both. And humanism is a very Western construct. And
as such is different from and complementary to Eastern approaches, such as the Buddhist group. I find that the more, the deeper I dig in some of these issues, the more I find that I think we're just running around the barn a different way, and we meet at the same place. The compassion and kindness and happiness that is advocated by humanists is, I understand, is also advocated by Buddhists. So I think we have a lot to learn from each other.
Any other questions?
Okay.
According to my wife, my father-in-law, whom I unfortunately never met, called himself a rational mystic. And I resonate with that idea because mysticism is for me not something that is outside of human experience, but it is the recognizing that many things are indeed mysterious because we don't understand them, even though we experience them. And I don't see any conflict between that kind of a spiritual view and what you call humanism. I also don't see any conflict between that and the type of Buddhism that I ended up practicing at more or less at the end, where there is a teacher who's written a book titled Buddhism Without Beliefs. And in some way, it's similar to humanism, I think, because you're talking about a way of seeing the world without having specific beliefs that you have to follow in order to embrace it.
I agree. And I consider myself a rational skeptic, or I'm open. I'm actually open to things. I'm convinced there are things that I don't understand, my life might be changed by knowledge that human beings would gain, but don't currently have. The example I like to refer to is what if we had X-rays so that we could show people Renaissance physicians? It's kind of like this science fiction. I don't know, it's Arthur Clarke or something said, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. And I think there are all kinds of things that we don't know, and I'm looking forward to finding them out.
I'm very curious to know how humanism would work in a group setting. I'm thinking in terms of, you know, major life transitions and what it's like to, I don't know how to put this into words. I'm thinking in terms of the life cycle of a human being, one in which there really isn't a church of humanism. For those of us who didn't discover that we were Unitarians until our adult lives, and I'm thinking of life transitions, becoming a teenager, growing up, going to school, becoming a parent, getting married, the process of grieving the loss of friends and family as they pass on, and preparing for our own transition. I guess maybe I'm thinking about how humanism approaches the growth of a human being across our life cycle and the transitions that we go through, many of which I found I had to do alone because I didn't have the community. And so how are we raising our children, not just as Unitarians, but as humanists, throughout those different periods of growth in our lives? Does that make any sense?
Totally. And there's another concept which has also had a fundamental effect on my thinking. That is a book, I can't remember the name of the author, but the book is called Necessary Losses. And the premise of the book is that as we progress through our lives, human beings, as we progress through our lives, that we go through stages of growth and loss, and that those two things always happen together. And sometimes the loss precedes the growth, sometimes the growth precedes the loss. But the book talks about the fundamental life transitions that you alluded to that we all go through. There's when we go from being a toddler to being a child, and from being a child to an adolescent, and from being an adolescent to an adult, and from becoming a parent. And even positive transitions, getting a new job, means that there is a loss that has to happen when you leave the old one behind, and that loss can sometimes have surprising effects. And the key, it turns out, to this process is the emotion of grief. Grief is the emotion that heals, and is the way that we go through these transitions. And I found that to be have tremendous resonance for me in terms of as I go through transitions in my life, being prepared for both the growth and the loss happening together.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to try something fun today. We're going to sing a cappella for a closing hymn, which I think is fun, and people are excited about it. It is a song we have sung. It's kind of a frequent UU song, but we're singing it a cappella because we wanted to sing first and fourth verse only versus the whole song. We found some videos, but it was going to be too hard to try to chop that up. So it's number 354 in your hymnals, if you want to read those. Words will also be on the screen. So for those of you who are familiar with this song, belt it out so that we can all hear a little bit. And so this is, there's not a wrong way to do this. So there really isn't. So this will be fun. We've got the words. We're going to just take off and go. Let's see, make sure I got everything here. So we're going to do the first verse, and it goes like this. We laugh, we cry, we live, we die, we dance, we sing our song. We need to feel there's something here. Okay, got it. Okay, we're practicing. We're getting you going. You know what you're doing. So stand as you're able, please, and willing, and we're going to just do it.
Yeah.
I know you got it in you. All right, one. Two, three, four.
We laugh, we cry, we live, we die, we dance, we sing our song. We need to feel there's something here to which we can belong. We need to feel the freedom just to have some time alone. But most of all, we need close friends we can't call our very own. And we believe in life and in the strength of love. And we are bound as a to be together. We have our hearts to give. We have our thoughts.
A hand. As I extinguish our chalice, I'll read a benediction from Amy Zucker Morgenstern. As we leave this hallowed place, may our feet remember its feel, so that whenever we walk, we know ourselves to be on hallowed ground. May we know that we are kin with every soul, every star, every stone, and every leaf of grass. And may our words be gentle and our touch be kind.